Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Areas like Missouri and parts of neighboring states extending into Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, and Kansas all due for multiple days of triple-digit heat, 100 degrees or higher.
Brad Rippey is a meteorologist with USDA. He's talking about some of the areas in the Corn Belt that are facing triple-digit heat this week.
And then looking at the drought map where you see that existing drought, especially the higher levels of drought, your D2s and D3s, severe to extreme drought, it could get a little dicey later this week with that combination of heat and drought. We're also going to see that heat extending into the upper reaches of the Midwest, at least for a brief period. But by the time we get to the weekend, we should see favorably cooler weather moving into that region.
This is Agriculture Today.
When Congress passed the 2018 Farm Bill, it explicitly legalized the sale of hemp and its derivatives such as CBD.
Oversight Subcommittee on Healthcare, where Jonathan Miller, General Counsel, U.S. Hemp Roundtable, said,
farmers across the nation relied on this and invested considerable resources to grow and market commercial hemp crops, particularly for the product for which there was immediate processing infrastructure and consumer demand, CBD and cannabinoids. But just a few hours after the Farm Bill was signed into law, FDA asserted its opinion that it was illegal to market CBD as a dietary supplement or to use as a food additive. Beyond warning letters that mostly targeted illegal disease claims, the agency is not engaged in meaningful enforcement. This position, coupled with lack of action, has cast a cloud over the industry. FDA has swung back and forth with contradictory positions. First, the agency affirmed its ability to regulate CBD under current law. We agreed. But then in the intervening 4 years, FDA stalled, even ignoring congressional appropriations report directives to take expedited action. Finally, this January, the agency concluded that it could not regulate CBD under existing regulatory pathways. It stated a concern over the substance safety. But in so doing, FDA relied on a narrow set of research focused on super high dosage CBD isolate formulations, while refusing to acknowledge a range of studies that demonstrate the safety of various CBD formulations at much, much lower dosage levels, such as those typically found in products sold at retail. A summary of these studies appears in my written testimony. Lack of a federal framework has led to the proliferation of unregulated products, some of which raise significant quality and safety concerns. Surplus hemp CBD biomass is being chemically converted into impairing products, such as Delta-8 THC, which are being sold unregulated, sometimes to minors. These products serve as a lifeline to U.S. farmers, and when manufactured properly, can be of considerable value to adult consumers. We oppose their ban or criminalization, but they need to be strictly regulated for safety and kept out of the hands of children. Meanwhile, federal regulatory uncertainty severely impacted the hemp and CBD markets, with reduced manufacturing demand resulting in a more than 90% commodity price decline, crushing farming opportunities. Please see this chart behind me. In all but one category, prices have collapsed due to FDA inaction. The one exception in green, that line represents the price of hemp flour, which recovered when it started being widely used for Delta-8 THC. It's clearly time for Congress to act. We support legislation that's been introduced by a bipartisan coalition. H.R. 1628 would provide a regulatory pathway for CBD as a food and beverage additive. H.R. 1629 would ensure that hemp ingredients could be lawfully marketed as dietary supplements. In the Senate, S-2451 and its companion House bill, H.R. 4849, would provide both regulatory paths. All of these would require compliance with the entire existing comprehensive regulatory frameworks for dietary supplements and food, which help ensure products are safe, properly labeled, and produced under good manufacturing practices. While we disagree with FDA's opinion that a new regulatory regime is needed, especially given the length of time this would require, we are certainly open to stricter regulation of CBD and other cannabinoid products on top of the existing frameworks. In the absence of FDA action, the hemp industry has established the U.S. Hemp Authority, a self-regulatory organization to promote high standards and best practices. States have stepped in, but a patchwork of inconsistent laws emerged. Without a federal regulatory pathway for requiring such standards, economic opportunities for U.S. hemp farmers will be diminished, and consumers will not have access to safe, quality products. Legislation is necessary to protect consumers, help stabilize hemp markets, open up a promising economic opportunity for U.S. agriculture, and honor the commitment made to growers in the 2018 Farm Bill.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So if we'll learn how to, they kind of like to be communicated with. Some of us are visual learners. Cattle are all visual, right? Particularly when they're communicating with us. They can't understand English.
Dr. Ron Gill is a Texas A&M AgriLife Extension cattle specialist.
They understand yelling, but they don't know if it's English or Spanish or French or what it might be. I never heard a Frenchman scream. I might holler. It would be kind of fun. I'd go over there and watch that. So we communicate with cattle from the standpoint of sight. There's two main ways we communicate with cattle, that's sight and sound. Sound can be very distracting and it can be very helpful. So we have to use it appropriately. And so we add a little bit of sound, we can add a little bit of pressure. We can actually use sound to draw their attention to us so they can see us, and then they can respond to our presence. So sight and sound. Touch is the other. We rarely get to use touch unless we're in a confined situation or up close to those cattle. So it's a kind of a third way. And I don't normally mention this, but a lot of the dairy people really focus on smell. Cattle can smell. And they can smell a lot of different things, probably much more sensitive than we can. But I don't know that that's as big an issue with us communicating with them as what we need done or not. But they can sure pick up when somebody new shows up and if it's a different odor associated with that. So if we look at sight being our main thing, sound being secondary, where are the receptors for those two things on the cow? Right on the head, right? Front 4 inches of the head, that's all we got to worry about. Think about the way you see people work cattle. They're focused on the body and they're pushing the cow around or whooping on their butt and they're screaming at them from behind. All that has to transfer through the eye and the ear before it makes any sense to a cow. So why don't we just work on that end?
Gil is a leading advocate for low-stress handling and talks about moving them using point of balance.
Now, other thing we want to try to do with cattle is get them to where we can sort them pretty easy. And we use point of balance to sort cattle. And most of you have probably seen the diagrams or seen videos where we're talking about point of balance being about the point of the shoulder. So what that means, if I go forward, those cattle are going to come forward. If I go this way, I can stop him. See that point of balance. There's some point in there he'll stop. And so we start using that as our brakes and our gas pedal. On some cattle, it's about the point of the shoulder, but there's nothing about the shoulder that dictates whether an animal moves forward or backward. It's where we're at in relationship to his eye. And so we use that to our advantage. So here I can draw that calf forward. I can step down his side, send him one on backside is going to go first. But then by using that point of balance, if I want this one to stop, I can get over here and stop him. Or I can move over here, that step toward him a little bit, and then he'll go. But then you get to where you've got quite a bit of control on the cattle because they start understanding as I step out, I want them to go forward. So I'll just stick them down there, and I want to get them to where I can start and stop them as I need to.
Dr. Ron Gill, it's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
You know, what we're really growing doesn't really, I mean, it matters, obviously, in the field and what we're doing and agronomically and how we process things. But from this standpoint, we're really talking about dollars and cents.
Alan Grafton is a principal with Pinyon and heads up Ag Knowledge.
There are really five basics, and some of these things are really going back to the real basics. And one of the first things I like to tell growers I work with is use real numbers. Don't lie to yourself. I mean, it's not doing anybody any good to make up a number that is not accurate. It doesn't put a yield that is not a cost, a price, that is not a real number. And that not only goes for those items, but as you're tracking information, bad data is just, it's in the future, it's going to hurt you when you're planning, when you're projecting. literally 2 weeks ago, I'm sitting down with a couple of growers I work with, and we're going through their year, and you know, their repairs are just super high. I mean, they're just really out of hand. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Why are they so high? Then I'm sitting down with a bookkeeper, and we start going through the books and start getting into some detail. And then I come find out, well, tell me about this expense. Oh, well, you know, we did some remodeling on the house. So we go through there, and $140,000 later, you know, we know what they spent on remodeling the house. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. It's your money. You need to spend it. I don't care if you want to go buy a fleet of Harley Davidsons, go on vacation, you know, whatever. But if it's hidden, and the farm can pay for it, that's your right as a business owner. I mean, that's why you're in business, to help buy these things, right? So, you know, I'm not hating on anybody, but just be accurate. You know, so now when I go on, you know, I can pull that $140,000 out as I'm helping them budget for next year and say, okay, well, that's, you know, that's not a yearly expense. I don't need to plan on this every year. So I just say, don't lie to yourself. Tell the truth. Use real numbers.
And as a managerial accountant says, focus on your numbers.
Another thing I really focus on is your numbers. And I say that over and over again. I'm always shocked. I've collected lots of data over the past 27, 28 years. And, you know, the first time I really saw this, 20 years ago, I had 26 growers, same area, same, you know, like soil, growing the same crop. We had 26 different yields, 26 different prices, 26 different seed costs, 26 different, I mean, everything was different. Everybody had a different outcome. So all this worrying we kind of do and you know, about, well, how am I doing? How are they doing? Looking at my neighbor, you know, you really want to start with your numbers. You know, benchmarking is great. I'm all about benchmarking. I love it. I love aggregating that data. I'm an absolute spreadsheet geek. Anybody that I work with over here will tell you that's where I spend all my time, is in Excel and running spreadsheets. So, but really, it's just so important to look at your numbers first. That's the first place you want to benchmark. What does it cost you? Because I can guarantee you, you know, everybody has different capital, different soil. They're paying different prices for products. So not one single person, as you look around, is alike. So you really can't always compare, you know, to your neighbor, because you don't know their situation. You know, they may be flush with working capital, and your working capital is at a different place. So your operating interest is more, a lot more. You know, so just, you know, really focus on yourself is what I want to always tell people.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
5 years ago, Congress passed the 2018 Farm Bill. That bill removed hemp and hemp-derived products, including CBD, from Schedule I status under the Controlled Substances Act.
That's Kentucky Representative James Comer.
Since that time, farmers, manufacturers, researchers, and distributors have looked for various ways to grow the industry and provide hemp and CBD products to the American people. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's February 2022 National Hemp Report shows that over 54,000 acres of U.S. land is utilized for hemp farming. Clearly, hemp has so much potential for our American economy, from growers and manufacturers to businesses of all sizes and consumers of many backgrounds. And since 2018, scientific research and careful study has continued to shed light on both the efficiency and safety of these products, especially CBD. FDA continues to imply that adequate scientific data is not available to inform their decision-making around CBD and hemp-derived products. But there's ample available data studying CBD and hemp-derived compounds. FDA simply not being transparent with the industry stakeholders or Congress in what scientific studies it relies on, and often moves the goalposts for researchers attempting to satisfy the FDA's requirements through rigorous studies. So even though we have more and more data available to regulators to make appropriate decisions about CBD in the marketplace, the FDA has taken no meaningful action to provide clear guidance and certainty in the market, refusing to regulate CBD products under existing lawful pathways. Without FDA regulations, the good faith producers of these products are left with no path forward, and consumers are left in the dark. It's well past time for FDA to do its job and act. more than just a major obstacle to the economic prosperity of our great farmers and producers of these products, the FDA's inaction has also led to concerns for consumers. With no regulations, shelves have been flooded with products that make various claims about content and dosage that may or may not be accurate, while others may be mislabeled and actually contain intoxicating variants of the cannabis plant like Delta 8 or Delta 9 THC. Consumers are often unaware that the CBD product that they are ingesting is not only going to assist them with joint pain and other relief, but could be adulterated with other compounds. The American people need to know what is in their products, and the FDA has the power to enforce reasonable regulations by regulating CBD as a dietary supplement or food additive. But still, they have not acted. I'm also concerned about the availability of potentially dangerous products making their way into the hands of children. Hemp-derived products like CBD and others intended for human consumption should be clearly labeled with an accurate accounting of their contents and available to responsible adults who are aware of any side effects and risks associated with those products. I've said this before at oversight hearings, but I take hemp-derived CBD from labs in my congressional district in Kentucky that I've seen and have confidence in. I think we all agree that it's beneficial for the industry and consumers alike when our shelves are stocked with products that contain what they say contain, while limiting the ability of irresponsible and bad faith actors to mislead consumers. If CBD were regulated as a dietary supplement, the FDA would have enforcement power to make this a reality. The hemp industry would prosper, consumers would have choice in the market, and the ability to rely on accurate labeling. It would be a win for our economy, a win for industry, and a win for the American consumer.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We won't be where we need to be until farmers quite literally have the right to repair their own agricultural equipment.
Rob LaRue is president of the National Farmers Union, talks about right to repair.
I mean, I think it just baffles people who don't know that with a lot of the important, sophisticated equipment that many producers have out there right now, that they're really their arms are tied. And again, as farmers and ranchers, we're all about not just being able to be adaptable, but we've got to keep the equipment running and keep things going, whether we're in harvest or we're planting. You know, we just can't afford those long shutdowns. So this is an issue that's gotten a lot of attention, not just at Farmers Union. And we've had promises over the years from some of the largest equipment manufacturers to do better. But then ultimately those promises that are just on paper go away and we don't have any lasting effect. And so we've been pushing hard at Farmers Union to get this put into law so that manufacturers just have to do right. It's common sense. I think most people see it that way. And right now we are as close as we've ever been to getting real meaningful lasting effect here. We had the first state, Colorado, which has just passed an agricultural right to repair bill that will be signed by the governor here in the coming days. That's a huge step because I think you are likely to see additional states coming on board with that. And ultimately, we certainly hope that manufacturers will just step up and do the right thing because nobody wants additional laws and regulations. But when manufacturers out there who dominate the marketplace and kind of use that monopoly power against farmers and ranchers' best interest, then that's where we have to step in. And so that's what we're doing. We're pleased to see some progress in Colorado.
The right to repair has been a priority for Farmers Union. There have been a few others as well.
As producers, let's take cattle markets, for example. As cattle producers, we want to make sure that we have strong markets out there. We want to make sure that our buyers are successful because we need them to be successful so that we can keep those markets strong and we keep prices where they should be. But too often right now, we have so much power just focused in a very few hands. If you look at the packers, everybody understands, you know, just how dominant those players are. And depending on what part of the country you're in, it's even more so. So markets aren't functioning the way that they're intended to. We've seen kind of this monopoly kind of power sweep in other ways to chicken markets and so forth, and now you just have all contract growers there. I don't think it's too far-fetched to think about the cattle industry kind of having a chickenization of that industry as well if we aren't careful. And so we are working with a number of partners to make sure that the antitrust laws that we already have on the books, so this isn't adding anything new, but making sure that those are enforced. That's really the key here, is making sure that everybody is playing by the rules, that that markets are functioning properly. They haven't been. We need to do better, and that's what we're pushing for.
The president of the National Farmers Union, Rob LaRue. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Did you have an earned net worth, or is it just from asset appreciation? You know, everybody can make their balance sheet grow by, you know, we can, you know, increase our land value by $1,000 an acre, and hey, you know, we're better off. But, you know, let's work on that top third of that balance sheet. That's where we want to focus. Where did we earn that dollar?
Alan Grafton's a principal with Pinyon and a managerial accountant with Ag Knowledge.
So we have got a lot of challenges ahead of us this year. You know, we've got, you know, costs are up, fertilizer costs are up everywhere, chemicals are up, every single thing is up. Everybody could take whatever you're driving and probably go sell it for more than you paid for it right now, but then you'd have to replace it, right? So, you know, everything seems to be up. So it's just going to be the utmost important to track that information and to know. Had one grower, you know, tell me one time, just I'd rather know I have a loss than not know anything. You know, just that uncertainty just drives folks crazy. I'd rather, you know, if I got something that's heading towards me, I can plan. I can talk to my banker. I can pivot. So, you know, not lying to yourself and knowing that information, even if it's not, you know, what the outcome you want, is unbelievably powerful.
Stop looking for that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
And, you know, everybody's looking for this holy grail of this massive, you know, one item that just does it all. This is going to do all this, flows into my accounting software, my taxes, and it's in the field. And I had this epiphany about all that and why everybody was having trouble with it. It's hard. And that's simple. It is absolutely It's the most difficult thing in the world. We're in an industry without walls. We have elements coming at us that we can't control. We have water issues that we can't control. It is very, very difficult. And so trying to capture all that information and do it. And so it really became for us, you know, we kind of had to pick a horse, and then it became about connectivity. You know, let's instead of everybody going out there and trying to invent, you know, the best thing in the world, let's take who's doing things well and let's connect them. You know, how can we connect this field information with this book information, you know, with this marketing information for the price, you know, with crop insurance, all the different things, the agronomic side of it, how do we connect all that and to get the result we're looking for? Because that field profitability is important. And the other thing is, I advise, you know, if you do want to get to that level, you know, don't let it overwhelm you, you know. Eat that elephant one bite at a time, because if all of a sudden, you know, somebody's out there selling you a new platform or a new software, it can be unbelievably overwhelming. And if you try to all of a sudden do it all at once, my advice is to take small steps, you know, make sure you've got consistency and, like I said, naming conventions, consistent yield map, consistent maps and borders around the farms, things like that, instead of having something different every, you know, start there, take those baby steps. And as you progress, you know, you can layer on that information, and all of a sudden you end up with history, and you end up with things, you know, gleaning things from different soil types and different ranches, and when you have, you know, different fertilization and all the different things that growers have coming at them. So that's my advice, is, you know, try not to get behind on that. You know, I see it all the time. Heck, I see it personally. I try to budget for the year for my personal finances, and I want to track everything, and I get 6 months behind, and then the answer goes, you know what, forget it. I'll do it next year. And I see that over and over again in ag, as everybody's like, all right, forget it. We'll do it next year. So, you know, just try not to let that overwhelm you.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
In the very short term, we know that we'll get a little bit of relief across the north, but as we move into August, how is it going to play out?
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey on the extended forecast
indicates that we are expecting to see both some good news and some bad news. The good news is near to above normal rainfall virtually nationwide, but at the same time, we are expecting near or above normal temperatures just about across the entire country, the exception being parts of the Great Lakes and northeastern states expecting cooler than normal conditions. The most intense heat expected to remain parked across the south and into the western U.S. In terms of rainfall patterns, the greatest likelihood of wet conditions will be along the Atlantic seaboard, especially from the Carolinas northward, and a second area likely to be wet, focused across the northern and central Rockies and parts of the adjacent plains.